Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back. Big Sook, back Monday. Always reliable Joey Harrington is with us, I believe. Can you hear me? Hello.
I can hear you. Hello. Can you hear me?
Where are you calling us from? I heard my sources told me that perhaps you were at the coast.
I am at the coast. Oh. That is a correct assertion. I am currently sitting and watching the wispy seagrass. Mm-hmm. As it blows. Wait, hold on. Holy breezy. It's been a little windier than usual today. Okay. Let me tuck back in.
Wow. All right.
No, it's been a fantastic week. But you know how it is on the Oregon coast.
I do.
You know, you get some beautiful days, but you get some days where you just kind of get blown off the sand. So those are the times when you explore the little coast towns. You find, you know, we found a great pinball spot today.
Pinball?
Oh, man. Pinball.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Where?
Yeah.
Seaside?
No. Nehalem.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep.
What's it called?
North Coast Pinball. I mean, the guy, Will, was the owner. Oh, I mean, that guy knows his pinball. He loves his pinball. Great with kids. I mean, you want to talk about a great day at the coast, saltwater taffy,
yes.
Pinball,
yes.
And sitting down on the docks, eating crab and drinking beer. Like, I'd say that's a pretty good day.
Dude, that's a great day. Life's good for Joey Harrington, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
I can't complain. How's the office?
It sucked. The weather's good, though. You're missing pretty good weather up here, although it's supposed to be hot this weekend. If you're still down at the coast, that's a smart move. Did that guy know who you were?
Who's that?
The Mark. Did you say his name's Mark? The pinball guy?
Will? Pinball? Will. No idea.
Oh.
Nope.
Do you like that?
It was great. Yeah, love it.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, that is nice.
Yeah.
All right, well.
So what are we talking about today, huh?
Well, the top of my notes, I will just read them to you. You dictated to us last week a story because we were going to talk about the opening of football camp.
Uh-huh.
And the top of my notes read exactly verbatim this. Hose down, roll through sand, and run a race with a record jockstrap story.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So what is that all about? Is that NFL? Is that college? What is that?
Well, let's. I mean, we can't just like jump into a story like that. What are we talking about? What's our topic?
Camp.
What are we?
Camp. Camp is opening.
Is that where we're going? We're going with the opening of camp.
Yeah, that's where we're going to start. I do want to ask you about Mariota. And, you know, guys like Mariota, Drew Locke, some of these guys that are in new spots but on bad teams. I've got some questions lined up there. But, I wanted to talk about camp. Camps are open. NFL camp, college camp. I don't know which is worse. Probably NFL camp, right?
Well, define worse. I mean, NFL camp is longer. NFL camp was longer, but college camp was more intense, I think.
Oh, really?
You know, it was this condensed. You know, we wouldn't show up. I'm trying to think, it was like two and a half weeks, I think, is what it was. Whereas NFL camp, I mean, it's a full month. I mean, you're mid July, and then you got preseason games, and you're going through. But that college camp was intense, and you're coming in with guys, the majority of which, well, let's say a quarter of which. I've never done this before, right? You're going to an NFL camp, and most guys know, you know, they've been around the block. They know what to expect. You got freshmen coming in that have no idea what to expect. It's a little bit different now. The guys have, you know, a lot of guys are foregoing their, spring of their, or graduating early to get in for spring ball. But, you know, figure you got 100 guys on the team, right? And 25 to 30 of them are coming in fresh. And not only do the seniors and up, you know, the juniors, upperclassmen kind of have to show guys the ropes of like how this whole thing works, but they also have to, you know, make sure that some of these cocky guys who, you know, think they've run the world, that, you know, they're Harry High School, know where they fall in the pecking order. So, you know, let's say potentially like you're all staying in the dorm one night, and then potentially like the fire alarm goes off, and potentially like the big, you know, scary seniors come and like herd everybody down into the cars that are potentially waiting in the parking lot, and they potentially drive you over to the practice field that had potentially been left unlocked by, you know, maybe a certain equipment manager.
Oh, dear.
And they say, all right, here's the jock straps, you know, get it, you know, and then, you know, they potentially put you through a series of, I mean, we'll call them initiation. You know, it's not like, you know, I say it now and I think of, gosh, like all the hazing. You know, it wasn't like, you know, you're not going like full Cam Cleland stuff where like they're hitting you over the head with, you know, socks filled with nickels.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was enough to, you know, to make you feel like you were kind of put in your place a little bit. It might have involved, you know, a hose, you know, getting sprayed down and then potentially rolling through sand and then, you know, coming out of the lineman chutes and then finishing with, you know, Beatles vinyl placed in places that you had to finish, you know, running a race with.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of welcome to college.
Wait, okay, so they put you in so they throw you in the jock straps. So they get you down there. Okay, so they planned all this. They throw the jock straps at you. You're in nothing but a jock strap, and they hose you down. You roll through sand and run with a record in between your legs?
Oh, I would. I didn't say
butt.
Legs.
Your butt.
I didn't say legs, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
At no point did I ever say legs.
Right, okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah. And then did you win, I guess? I mean, I don't know. Were you good at it?
I don't know. I just remember Bilotti getting pissed at everybody the next day, and everybody on the team, including the guys who were all hazed, had to roll. Like, so, you know, you just had to. So, and honestly, it was kind of one of those things where it was like, all right, you take your punishment, you take it as a team, and then you walk off the next, you know, after that, it's like, all right, we're all in this together. So there was a little bit of that, you know, bonding moment that kind of went with it as you're all puking your guts out. Like, all right, I'm in now.
Huh. Okay. So who ran the toughest camp, college or pro?
Who ran the toughest camp?
I mean, I'm asking coach. It could be either, you know, it could have been Bilotti.
Yeah. I'm trying to think through this. I mean, you know, Bilotti was, it was solid. I mean, I very distinctly remember, you know, early morning meetings, late night meetings, you know, and then a couple practices during the day. I mean, it was a grind. By the time I got to camp with Nick Saban, they had instituted the, you couldn't do doubles back to back, right?
Yeah.
So you had to do one a day, you know, one practice one day and then two the next, then one, right? And it was an interesting mix too, because Saban, I mean, good God, that guy would have run us into the ground. But we also had the guys on the team. It was the Jason Taylors and the Zach Thomas and Kevin Carter and, you know, all those guys that commanded some respect, those vets that were able to stand up to Saban and say, no, we're going to work for you, but we're not going to do anything stupid. So there was that interesting push-pull with Saban's camp. But, yeah, you could – I mean, I think part of it, too, was just the – like, I mean, it would be – I remember days walking out onto the field at Miami, and we would practice at night, right? So you'd practice early in the morning for your doubles, and then, you know, late in the evening, nighttime, you know, when you do a double day. And we'd walk out there at 8 o'clock at night, and I'm not kidding, there would be a cloud – sitting on the field of humidity, and you'd walk out of that air conditioned practice facility and whap, it would just like slap you in the face. And it would be 95 degrees and 95% humidity, and you'd be like walking in and like drinking this cloud soup as you're walking onto the practice field. Those were fun, ridiculous practices.
Did those? You always hear those stories of the old school guys. I remember when we had Mike Riley on, he would tell us about Bear Bryant not giving them water, you know, and like and I know that's obviously changed now, but does the tough camp, like the real hard camp, did that pay dividends, or is that overrated to the point of like, you know, it's better to work smarter, not harder, you know, in that instance?
I think it kind of depends, right? You know, if you can put guys through that type of camp, there is something that is resiliency that is built up. Right, this idea that I've done the hard stuff already, so by the time you get to the game, right, there's something to be said about the coach being the bad guy and all the players rallying together against him, right? Because it creates that unity, right? Mm-hmm. But there was an interesting that kind of happened, and it was really about the time that I was kind of making that transition into the NFL, where guys were training and guys were working out and putting their bodies through things in the off seasons where they didn't need that grueling training camp.
Right.
At the start of the season. Right. Cause you know, there were guys that would, you know, sell cars in the off season in the NFL. Right. And they come in and, you know, they do a few wind sprints and all of a sudden they use training camp to get into shape. Right. Mm-hmm. But by the time I was coming out of college and making that transition in the NFL, guys, I mean, you were in your year round training. Right. And so the teams that really had those grueling camps and were able to get out of it, yeah, they got a little something more maybe, but what often happened is guys would get injured and guys would get hurt because you're putting your body through too much. And they simply couldn't handle it. And then what happens is you're starting the season off depleted, right? And that's not helpful to anybody.
Yeah.
So there's, I mean, now in the way that people train and the way that diets and exercise regimens are all put together, there is something to be said for being smart as opposed to being just a jerk who's trying to get guys into shape, because you're already in shape.
So if you're a first year guy, rookie in the NFL or first year college player, which one's harder for the first year guy, the league or college?
I thought the league personally, and it had nothing to do with physically, because when you came in as a rookie, or when I came in as a freshman, I didn't expect, you know, sure, let's go chuck it around, see what I can do, see if I can make a splash. And it didn't work. Great. You know, I'm in a red shirt and I'll end up in math 101. And you know, you start a 5-year journey. But when you're drafted third overall and they hand you a check and say, all right, go change a franchise, like that's different. That's immediate. Right. And I approached it in a way like I wanted to try and earn guys respect, and, you know, which of course you want to do. But the immediacy that exists in the NFL is something that didn't exist in college football. You're starting to see it a little bit now, you know, the rumblings of, you know, the Ty Thompson, you know, he's a 5-star guy. Why isn't he playing? Well, because he's 19 and maybe, you know, and maybe, you know, somebody misjudged a 16-year-old kid, which could happen. But that's the most difficult part, I think, or was the most difficult part for me is making that transition to truly becoming a guy that, you know, I don't want to say I didn't earn that position of being the quarterback, of being the leader, right? But when you're in college, you have the opportunity to earn it. You have an opportunity to earn it before they hand it to you. In the NFL, they draft you, cut you a check, and say, well, there you go.
Yeah. So if you went back and did your first camp with Detroit all over again, you would go in more – because I know you've said before, you said – you didn't really want to ruffle feathers. I mean, you're a rookie and right. You know, you're getting your feet wet. You would go in more guns a-blazing, I'm the quarterback, and try to take charge right away.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Because what happened is it created a situation where the coaches were where the coaches were, I was looking to the coaches to set the tone, and the coaches were looking to the players to set the tone. And we had Robert Porche on defense, but we had a bunch of young screw-offs on offense, right? Mm. And so it left this leadership void that, you know, by the time I tried to jump in and fill it, it all, you know, we that ship had kind of sailed.
Right. Interesting. All right, let's pause, and when we come back with our dear friend Joey Harrington, live from the Oregon coast, I'd like to ask him about Marcus Mariota and if he is being set up to fail in Atlanta. More with Joey next on The Fan.
The Fan.
Okay, back live here with Joey Harrington, that big suit out. He'll be back Monday. One last little topic I wanted to hit, and then we'll let you get back to crab and, what'd you say, crab and beer? Or was that lunch?
That was lunch.
Yeah. What's for dinner?
Jetty Fishery, just north of Rockaway.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, like literally just like in the Nehalem, like just walk on down to the pier. They just pull it out and drop it in the steamer and throw some corn in there. In 20 minutes, they got your bag and then put it on a tray and get yourself a beer and sit and, you know, sit at the picnic table.
Now you got a place out that way?
We used to have a place a few years ago, but we got here like, you know, those kids start growing up and we got there like one time a year. So we sold it about 5 years ago.
Mariota, last thing I wanted to ask you about. You've been where he is. You know, he gets another
chance. In more ways than one. Atlanta and being the revivery guy.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess my question about him or a guy like maybe even Drew Lock in Seattle, if a guy's got more in him, will it show, or is he sort of at the mercy of the team around him? In other words, is he being set up to fail out there?
Yes and no. I wouldn't necessarily put Drew Lock and Marcus in the same category.
Okay.
And maybe this is me, but prior to injury, I would say that Marcus had some good years, or some good flashes in there. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, Lock sucks. Maybe, you're right.
I don't necessarily think of Drew Lock as an answer, right? He's a plug. He's a cork, right? You plug him in to fill a hole to figure out what's going to happen. Yeah. With Marcus, was he the second pick of the draft, right?
Yeah, after Jameis.
Heisman Trophy winner. The guy was brought in to save a franchise, right? So there's obviously some talent there. Talent that was recognizable at the collegiate level, talent that NFL scouts wanted to have as part of their team. Now, for a variety of reasons, you know, we talk about it all the time, injuries, confidence. Marcus didn't work out in Tennessee. But here's what I like is the fact that, you know, when I left Detroit, I went to Miami to fight for a job, right? And, you know, we've told you the story when Saban sat down and said, look, we're trading a second-round pick for Dante Culpepper. We're trading a fifth-round pick for you. He's going to take the first reps. You'll take the second. I don't care what we're paying him. I don't care what we're paying you. Whoever's better is going to play. Can you deal with that? I was like, yeah, great. That's fantastic. That was the – and then, you know, after I left Miami and that mess when Nick left, I went to – Atlanta thinking I was going to back up Vic, right? And then get thrown into the mix again, right? So I continued to play year after year after year because I earned jobs and then, well, because, you know, Mike went to prison. I mean, that kind of happened, right? What I love about Marcus is that he's had a couple years to just take a breath. There's so much thrown on you as a rookie, as the, you know, the second pick, Heisman Trophy winner. Like we talked about, like all the money, all the pressure, all the expectations, and it didn't work out. And so he's had a couple years to take a step back, to recalibrate, to say, to get himself healthy, to say, what do I do well? What didn't I do well? And you know, for me, it was just like, by the time I figured, you know, got my feet under me, hell, we were back into the next season and I was with a new team. And it was like, well, here we go again. Marcus has had a chance to take a little bit of time to assess where his career is right now, really, and go after it. Now, is he surrounded by the best team? No, he's not. Can he have success there? Absolutely, he can. You can find ways to be successful. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, it's the idea of, you know, just say don't make a mistake, but play winning football, right? You play mistake-free football. The problem that he's going to have, or the conundrum that he's going to find himself in, is if he plays too conservative, right? And plays not to make a mistake, plays, you know, because he's not surrounded by talent upon talent, he runs the risk of falling into that conservative trap that he fell in Tennessee, right? Where you're scared to make a mistake. On the flip side, if he goes out and tries to go guns a-blazing, he doesn't necessarily have the talent around him to make those plays. He's got Kyle Pitts, which can be a great asset at tight end. But you know, the suspension of Ridley, it's going to be different. It's going to be difficult. So he's kind of in this limbo where he can't be too conservative, but he can't be too aggressive. But there is a window for him to be successful. And I think part of that will come from the fact that he's had a couple years to reassess, recalibrate, and get himself healthy and give another run at being the type of player that I expected him to be, you know, 6 years ago.
Yeah, a little breather. All right. Yeah. Well, one last, we only have time for one more. And I was reading the results of the Pro Bowl Confidential that The Athletic did, where they did an anonymous player survey at the Pro Ooh. Bowl. Yeah. And one of the questions was the coach you'd most like to play for. And Mike Tomlin won. Mike Vrabel was right behind him. Have you ever thought about, or do you have a coach in mind that, man, if you feel like if you could have just played with him or played under him, things could have been different? Or somebody you just wanted to play for?
I wanted to play for Dick Vermeil.
Oh, really? Why?
I just connected with him.
Yeah.
That was one of the five teams Kansas City was looking for a quarterback. And you know, the coaches that I would have had a chance to play for was Marty Mornhinweg. I don't remember who the Texans coach is, but that wasn't gonna happen. And then Spurrier was in Washington. I can't remember who was in Cincinnati, but Dick Vermeil was in Kansas City, and I really wanted to play for Dick Vermeil. I think that would have been a great spot for me.
So those five you said. So this was when for the Atlanta.
No, when I was coming out of the draft.
Oh, when you were coming out. Right. Oh.
Buffalo, Cincinnati, Kansas City, Washington. And Detroit were essentially the five teams that, you know, once Houston said they were taking David Carr, those were the five teams that were looking for a quarterback.
Okay. Buffalo, you said? Who was their coach? Mm-hmm.
Buffalo and Cincinnati. I cannot remember who their head coaches were.
What year was that? 2000?
It would have been 2002.
All right. I'll look that up. Yeah.
20 years ago.
Well, did Spurrier not interest you?
20 years. Spurrier was great. But, yeah, so here's my conversation with him. We had dinner. He was like, "Yeah, well, Joe, so we're going to check the football around, right? We're going to throw it around a little bit. And, hey, do you like golf?" Excuse me. Yeah, you like golf. You play golf. I was like, "Oh, yeah, coach, I do." "Oh, that's good, because every day about 2 o'clock, we're just gonna be done. We're gonna be done, and we're gonna go play golf." I was like, "What do you mean we're gonna be done?" It's like, "Well, yeah, I'm practice will be done and film. You can stay if you want, but I'm gonna go play golf." So
sweet.
That was probably why Steve Spurrier didn't stick around too long in the NFL, because every day at like 2 o'clock he left.
Oh my
god, he wasn't kidding. He left and he went to play golf.
That does not surprise me in the least, by the way.
Nope.
Okay, Mornhinweg was in Detroit, as you obviously know. Dick LeBeau, Cincinnati.
Oh, that's right.
Kansas City had Dick Vermeil. Buffalo's coach, oh boy, Greg Williams.
Greg Williams, that's right.
Oh my god. He was the guy, he was the bounty guy, right?
Yep, I was with him in New Orleans. Yep.
Was he as bad as he seems? Because he seemed bad.
I didn't have a whole lot of experience with him directly.
Yeah, he was the defensive guy.
Yeah.
What was the other team you said?
Kansas City, Detroit, Buffalo, Cincinnati, and Washington. Yeah. Spurrier, the golfer.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah.
So you didn't really have a lot of great coaches. I can see why Dick Vermeil jumped out. It's like, man, that Dick Vermeil was a good coach. Those other guys, you know.
Yeah, not so much.
Not as much.
Yeah.
right.
Yeah. So, okay. Do we have time for another 30 seconds, or are we running up against the, my favorite extension of the story time. I don't know if it's true or not, you know?
Oh.
Right. So, but this was the story that I got when Spurrier was drafted to, the Niners. Right. And as he gets out there, he won the Heisman, and somebody runs into him at the gas station. He's like, oh, hey, you know, Steve, hey, welcome to San Francisco. You know, and he's like, oh, thank you so much. Thanks so much. How are you getting along? You getting used to the Bay Area? Oh, yeah, yeah. I got a place over in San Jose, you know, over in that San Jose area. And the guy says to him, you know, actually, out on the West Coast, it's pronounced San Jose. And I was like, oh, you know, thanks so much. I appreciate it. Yeah, you know, you're really close to California or California, Mexico. You know, there's a lot of, you know, Spanish language kind of transition to, oh, great. Well, thanks to, and say, so they're talking a little bit at the gas station there. And, you know, he finishes up. He's like, oh, well, you know, you got camp coming up here pretty quick. And, you know, when do you guys start off? He's like, oh, no, I'm not really sure, but I think it's probably sometime in Hoon or Hulai.
So, oh my God, are you serious?
I can neither confirm nor deny that is true.
Oh,
but that
geez.
Is what you know.
Boy.
That's what's been going around.
And
so he likes to play golf, and he likes to do it in Hoon or
Boy, that just really does sound like him too. It really does. That guy. Oh my God. All right. Well, we'll leave it on that note. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Enjoy your weekend. There's Joey Harrington. Wow. Wow. Wow.
I didn't know where that was going.
No, I didn't either.
And the punchline got me really good.
Yeah, that was okay. All right. Joey Harrington's appearances here on the show are brought to you by, I have it here somewhere. Yeah, there it is. BMW Portland, where relationships matter. Visit BMW Portland on Southwest Jefferson downtown, or bmwportland.com. Also brought to you by Mods PDX. The future of building is here.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.